The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. There's a tremendous interest in the future today. Almost everybody trying to look on beyond our time and into the 2000s or the 1990s and wondering where in the world is going. There's quite an interest in occultism, in seances and crystal ball gazing and tarot cards and oriental religions and futuristic beliefs from various sources where we hope that people can give us some kind of a handle on what's happening, where perhaps personally we can find out about our own travel or our own personal lives, our own financial condition and circumstances. People look to astrology today as never before. They want to know the signs and the portents. I've never seen such a boom in such a short period of time as in the last decade or so in interest in astrology. Any more entertainers, politicians, almost everybody talks about which sign you were born under, what kind of a person you're going to be, and what are the best signs and portents for you to make this and that and the other business or social or personal or emotional deal with someone. Quite an interest in the future. There are the prophets, the seers, the would-be prophets and seers who try to predict everything from presidents' assassinations or the toppling of government. And people are really concerned about the future. They want to know where the world is headed. Will there come a Great Depression, for example? Will joblessness go on to 10 or 11 or 12 percent, for example? Will the United States get involved in any more overseas wars, for example? Is the price of crude oil going to come down? People want to know. And you know, it's unbelievable to me that so many people ignore the greatest source of information about the future that has ever been given to the world, like an overall master plan, an outline of what we are doing on this earth, like the handbook from the Creator to us human beings on this spaceship Earth about what our journey is all about, and yet we don't read it. Very few people seem to realize that about a third of the Bible is prophecy, and that much of Bible prophecy is for our time today, about 90% of it or more, is being or about to be fulfilled right now today. Very few people seem to realize or pay any attention to the fact that Jesus Christ of Nazareth came talking about a world-ruling government, that he talked about the future of humankind, that he talked about things such as drought and famine, in other words, disease, striking massive populations. He talked about global conditions, global weather and natural calamities. He talked about wars and rumors of wars in a multinational concept of groupings of nations, talking of kingdoms and nations. And yet people think that he was just a religious figure who had a lot of nice ideas, maybe a little ahead of his time, some of them pretty unworkable and impractical, but at least he believed in them, came along and got himself martyred for his pains, and he's probably on an equal par, many people think, with Nostradamus or Muhammad or some other prophet, or maybe with Buddha or somebody. And you can read what he said, you can think of him as a very nice man, sage, filled with wisdom, claimed to be the Son of God. Some people even believe he was the Son of God, and actually pray to God in heaven and use the name of Jesus Christ. But do those same people know that Jesus was the greatest prophet of all, and that he came to give prophecies about the coming end of an age? Not the end of the world, oh no. He never talked about the end of the world. Never did Jesus predict the world was going to be destroyed. Never did he predict all humankind would be annihilated. Never was he a doomsday prophet. He did say there were going to be massive problems, all right. He did say there was going to be such a terrible time of climactic trouble on the earth, it would literally take the hand of God to stop it, or humankind would perish from the face of the earth. But he came giving what is called good news. Now, I know you can say I got bad news and good news. You've heard some of the jokes about the Martians have landed and the rest of it, probably. And you could say that the gospel is like, I've got bad news and good news. I'll give you the bad news first. The world is headed toward war and famine and drought. It's headed toward a time of greater political and economic and social and military chaos than ever before in all of history. That's the bad news. The good news is that just after that, it's headed for a 1,000-year period of the greatest growth, of the greatest development, of the greatest happiness and peace and well-being, security, everything you want to mention that is really a good word that could ever be imagined, a literal utopia for 1,000 years. That's what the Bible is all about, really. It's kind of like I've got bad news and good news. The bad news is the world, if it continues on its present course, defiant of God, defiant of God's laws, defiant of the Bible, appropriating a personality, claiming to believe in Him, but not paying attention to what He said, not obeying what He said, not doing what He said. If the world continues in its present state of relying upon governments of man, attempts at many nations to get together to formulate some world organization of states, which is a loose-knit governmental attempt at world government, but has no real structure, has no real power, no police force, no power or force to back it up, and so fails abysmally every single time. So long as the world continues trying to govern itself apart from the laws of God, ignorant of the great Creator God that gives you every breath of air you breathe, well, then the world is edging closer and closer to absolute doomsday-type catastrophes. It just is. You've heard of doomsday weapons. You've heard of the plans of nations to bury bombs deep beneath the surface of the ocean. Some people have actually speculated that maybe the Soviet Union and the United States could both have nuclear bombs planted all over the world, maybe under each other's major cities, and then there could be the magical button, you know, on the proverbial desk in the Kremlin and the one in the White House, perish the thought. And each one of these two great world leaders would have the instant capability of annihilating himself as well as the enemy nation. And that this would be unthinkable, and since we've reached a nuclear stalemate to where this is unthinkable, to where there can be no real victors but only losers in a nuclear war, that instant retaliation would mean the annihilation of the attacking force or all of their population, because we've now entered a time of global war against total populations for total states, where it's not any matter, a matter of military expeditions or of amphibious assaults or of aircraft, bombers, tanks, planes, and guns, that type of thing, but now intercontinental ballistic missiles, maybe laser rays from outer space, orbital satellites, neutron bombs, death rays, and the like, some of the specters of the warfare of the future. And so we've reached the ultimate stalemate, and people have actually seriously proposed that we have reached a state where we ought to have these doomsday-type weapons, and that would bring a kind of detente, which would mean that no one would dare use them, because we'd just not dare light the fuse. It would be unthinkable. Well, it's quite an unbelievable proposal, isn't it? To give each nation the capacity to obliterate the other by permission. Well, in one sense of the word, that's about where we are today, only minus the magical button. The button is probably thousands of buttons that are in the hands of captains of nuclear submarines and cruisers and frigates and aircraft carriers, in the hands of generals in the Strategic Air Command and in the Soviet fleet and the Soviet Air Force and rocketry and missile experts. The buttons are in the hands of thousands of people, but they really, in one sense of the word, are controlled ultimately by that one person. Now, there is no magic button on the desk in the White House that could instantly, by just pressing it, send thousands of American rockets to obliterate the Soviet Union. But there are American nuclear missile-carrying submarines that ring the Soviet Union, and there are Soviet missile-carrying submarines that ring the United States, and there is not one city inside the United States that is out of reach of their ballistic missiles. Same comment. And so the United States has the Soviet Union stalemated, and the Soviet Union has the United States stalemated. And in the meantime, the population bomb ticks on, and the devouring of Earth's resources goes on apace, and growing monumental internal problems of sick economies, of rampant crime, of drought and bad crops goes on apace. And there are political earthquakes as well as natural earthquakes worldwide. Governments topple. Well, isn't it about time you wondered, how's it all going to come out? Jesus said, I've got bad news and good news. In effect, you know, the gospel is good news. That's what it means, really. But he talked also of a time that he calls the day of the Lord. And the Bible says, woe unto those that desire the day of the Lord. It's a day of gloominess and of darkness, a day of terror, of chaos, of men's hearts failing them for fear. Jesus talked of a time of tidal waves, of waves roaring and men dying of heart attacks. The book of Revelation, called apocalyptic, meaning really that we have watered down or changed that word, because the Greek word merely means to reveal, The Greek word apocalypse means revelation. And so people have taken that to mean catastrophic. They think apocalyptic rhymes with catastrophic. No, it does not, anything of the sort. Something that is apocalyptic really means revelatory. The book of Revelation is a book, however, that is filled with statements and prophecies about impending calamities that are going to be global in effect, that affects the entirety of the surface waters of the earth, that affects every river and stream and creek and lake and bay and estuary and ocean on the face of this earth, that affects all the grass, the bushes, shrubs, and trees on the earth. The book of Revelation is a prophecy. It has a general time sequence. There are prophecies in the Old Testament that talk about the times in which we live. And Jesus gave it all sense and shape and form and meaning when in the New Testament in Matthew 24 he talked of a time which would be just prior to his return to this earth. He called it a time when, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Meaning he admitted that there would come a time where human extermination, human annihilation would be possible. And we live in that time. We live in a time where it is possible for all of humankind to be obliterated. But Jesus said, for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. The gospel message he brought then is the good news that too much of the bad news is not going to be allowed to happen. That just so much bad news is going to come along and then God is going to cut it short. That humankind is going to be saved from himself. There will be wars, he said so. There will be terrible natural disasters and calamities, he said so. There will be incredible loss of life, he said so. But he said the world is not going to be destroyed. He said mankind is going to survive. And he talked about how and why. And believe it or not, approximately when, not by date, not meaning year and month and week and day and hour, but he certainly talked about when in terms of a time setting, of a sequence of events, that event A must come before event B and so on, and he outlines exactly when those days are going to occur. Now, I've begun a series of programs in the book of Jeremiah to wade through one of the Old Testament books of the Bible to talk about a combination of warnings and of witness, of, you might say, a voice of alarm lifted up about the incredible emotional, mental, physical, spiritual, and moral morass into which the peoples of God have gotten themselves, and a warning from a prophet of God who wrote it all down then. And it is absolutely applicable to us today. It talks about cause and effect. It talks about hazards and benefits. It talks about the natural consequences for breaking natural laws. It says what we ought to do to get the blessings, the benefits, and the rewards. And it says what will happen if we don't get in harmony with the laws of God. And that what will happen, that consequences part of the book of Jeremiah, constitutes the prophecies that we are seeing being fulfilled right now today. What about this where it says, therefore the showers have been withheld and there is no latter rain? You know, people all over the Midwestern section of the United States could say, well, it just seems like the heavens have dried up. The showers have been withheld. Oh, some drought-breaking rains come long after the crop damage has been done, but what about some of those prophecies where it says your own wickedness will correct you? What about the prophecies of a nation which apparently has changed its God, where other nations in the Orient and other places have never done so? Does that sound like us today? What about the prophecy that talks about being brought into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof, but people who entered into that beautiful, broad, green, luxuriant land of cornucopia, virtually, defiled that land, polluted and befouled and besmirched it, burnt it, dried it up, carve roads and bridges and buildings and asphalt all over it, and then wondered why in the world it didn't have enough to eat. Well, those are in the opening verses of the first couple of three chapters of the book of Jeremiah. It's a lot of cause and effect. So last time I barely was able to get into it in the second chapter. I'm going to take it up right about where I was, that scripture I was just talking about, where God said to his people that they would be brought into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. That's Jeremiah 2 and verse 7. But he said, when you entered, you defiled my land and made mine heritage an abomination. Now, actually, he was talking more in that day of the fact that those people went after false gods, false religions, idolatry, and the like, even on down to the abominable practice of human sacrifice, then he was talking about modern-day devouring of earth resources and covering up of arable land and trying to farm the desert, the pouring on of prodigious amounts of sprays and fertilizers and pesticides and toxic chemicals onto our soil, and then wondering why we get lettuce and tomatoes that are tasteless and watery and that don't have any flavor and probably aren't good for us. He really was talking during that time more of idolatry and defiling or befouling the land in that sense. But yet, by transference or by the larger application, since the Bible does say that covetousness is idolatry, and there is one of the Ten Commandments that talks about covetousness, and it talks about goods, and it talks about wealth and land and wife and manservant and ox and cattle, and whether you want to say automobiles, aircraft, homes, double ovens, boats, vacations, or whether you want to talk about the commercialism of our day and age that people just lust and covet and arise in shoplifting because of the glittering parade of seemingly endless goods hanging there conveniently in their little plastic wrappers that everybody seems to covet and desire, so people reach out and steal and take. Well, really, that principle applies to us today. We live in a glittering wonderland. 6% of the population of the earth wallowing around in 50% of its wealth, and a lot of them stealing from each other because they feel they somehow don't have enough and that the world owes them a living. So really, in that sense, though, most people you see today are not bowing down before a rock idol. Oh, some are, maybe, but most aren't. Yet almost everybody is in frantic pursuit of the so-called almighty dollar. They are absolutely in search of money, of goods, swelling with ego and greed, jealousy, lust, covetousness, and vanity. They will spend their lives in pursuit of such things. Total commercialism, total materialism, where the values that are really important, peace of mind, the values of education, of culture, of the right kind of relationships with one's God and one's neighbor and one's family and friends, the values of character, of honesty, of industriousness, of thrift, of hard work, of faithfulness, of duty. Why, these are just a lot of empty words. People with their slang and their watered-down, butchered English language and all the colloquialisms of different parts of the country can just sneer and scorn at any such things as honesty. They say, yeah, who's honest? Integrity? Heh, show me one. And so the idea is, the other guy is guilty, why shouldn't I be? The idea is, two wrongs make a right. The idea is, why, government is even guilty. So we're probably going to see an innate rise in crime because people have got their excuse. They say, well, look, it reaches all the way into the very highest corridors of the White House. People take an opportunity, being bought, I mean, real estate deals, this and that. Why shouldn't I? Yeah, this is the argument. Somebody else did it. You know, God is just going to look at people like that and shake his head, say, you poor fool. He's going to comment about people who use that idiotic excuse that somebody else did it, when the Bible is loaded with statements that each person is going to answer for himself. Everybody is going to give account for himself. God's going to say, I told you that over and over again. Said it through the prophets, said it through Ezekiel, said it in the book of Romans. What thinkest thou, O wife, whether you shall save your husband, or O husband, whether you're going to save your wife? When you get down to spiritual salvation and, believe it or not, even physical preservation, physical salvation from terrible impending calamity, it's a personal, it's an individual thing. You don't get through on somebody else's good or bad deeds. You don't justify evil by saying somebody else did it too. Oh, I know when thieves fall out, the one guy that gets caught nearly always rats on the other guy and gives his address and telephone number and physical description. That's the way of crooks and thieves and cheats. But God isn't going to accept that as an excuse. You will see more and more crime in the United States because more and more people are justifying criminal acts. And it's so stupid. That's the most tired excuse you ever heard of. Somebody else did it first. Why shouldn't I? He took a spoonful of arsenic. Why shouldn't I? You hurt me. Now watch me kill myself. Dumb. You talk about addle-headed. But that's the way we are. That's the way we run our daily affairs. That's the way we act one with the other. Someone hurts somebody, they retaliate. They don't say, Father, forgive him. He didn't really mean it that way. And then they themselves forgive him. No, they retaliate. And the idea is, how can I retaliate to hurt that person worse than they hurt me? Well, in our false commercialism and in our unbelievable, crass, toadish, egotistical materialism, we are just as guilty of Baalism and idolatry as any of those people back there wearing animal skins were. You know, I watch once in a great while some of these television quiz shows, and I'm going to rename them. I mean, some of them should be called, one of them should be called Unabashed Greed, and there should be another one called Total Lust, and then there should be another one called Unbridled Ego. You know, you see the expressions on people's faces. You listen to the gasp of the audience. Here is some abominable little gas gulper sitting behind this drape. This dumb thing may come apart around the corner. It may give you a pretty good gas mileage. I'm not knocking the industry, except to say that I see that there are absolute proofs that many of them are rather poorly put together, and sometimes they're pretty, you know, slipshod workmanship, and nuts and bolts do fall out of them. And there have been people, and I'm here to tell you I can prove it if you'd like to get the proof. The federal government can even give you the proof, who have been asphyxiated and have died in their automobile just because they didn't properly vent the fumes the way they should have. Ralph Nader has attacked some of the major automobile companies. He discovered one pretty jazzy model that literally would come apart right in the middle and become two automobiles under certain stress, and was known to flip off the road like a wild roller skate. It was one of the most unstable things you ever saw. So now that I've said that to cover myself, back to the scene. The little gas gulper is sitting there with its 25 factory defects, sitting there waiting for you with that ridiculous seat belt that won't let you can't even turn it on. What if a woman is in a shopping center and she's being chased by a crook and she's got her baby in there and she wants to jump in real quick and start the engine and escape? You can't do it. The crook's got you. You can't do it. You can't jump in your car and escape anymore. The stupid laws are that you are going to protect your life by not having an accident, and so if that crook is about to stick a knife into you, or to rape you, or to strangle you, or rob you or something, you got to sit there and buckle your safety belt first. So it gives him time to get you. Well, that's another subject maybe, but here's that little slipshod piece of workmanship with 2-year built-in obsolescence sitting behind the drapes. Now it comes, you know, Mrs. Greed. It's her turn. Mrs. Green Greed is now standing there along with Joe Lust and two or three people named perhaps Ego, Avarice, and Vanity. Anyhow, they're all standing there, and this is your opportunity, and the drapes part open up, and everybody gives an absolute gasp. I mean, it's more of a gasp than as if they'd seen a healing or a miracle, by far. Here's an automobile. And they all go, oh, there are moans. It almost sounds like a kind of a religious ceremony. Those people clap in glee. They cover their mouths. Their eyes kind of go ding, ding, ding. And cherries and lemons come up, and it says tilt on their face. They applaud. You know, some of them chew the sack of popcorn. Two or three are chewing their hands. Several of them are gnawing the leather off the back of the chair in front of them. You know, they're lying down. They're kicking. They're screaming. Oh, man. And, you know, two or three of them swallow their cigars. They perspire and their glasses fog up. You know what I mean. The total scene. Ears laid back, loud whinnies, galloping sounds. Here comes the audience. They run over the poor MC and grab the car. No, I'm just kidding. But anyhow, they draw the drapes back, and here's the little gas gulper sitting up there, and people scream with delight. I really can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Why in the world should that particular symbol be as important to the American people today as Dagon was to the Philistines? I mean, why should they bow down before the stupid thing? Why should people make such asses of themselves in public to shriek and scream and nearly faint with their desire? And you see this heightened expectancy, and you root for them because you're so afraid they're going to have a heart attack. I mean, one of these days, I don't know whether, do doctors examine those people before they get on the stage? I really think they should, because some of them are overweight. And the disappointment level, I mean, the suspense is just too much. Now, there's several such programs, several such shows. I'm not attacking any one of them. I'm talking about human nature. I'm attacking human nature, which is my nature, your nature, and the nature of all of us that we've got to overcome. I'm not attacking the program. The people that put the programs together are smart enough to play on human nature. And they're also smart enough to know that all that free advertising far more than pays for many times the price of those little gimmicks that they give away on those programs, and so are the companies that give them away. At any rate, I hope that some of them have doctors there, because when you see the degree of disappointment, I can't help but wonder what it looks like out the back door. You see this person coming out, staring, you know, straight off into the wilderness, kind of a blank, glazed stare, hands trembling, being dragged along unwillingly by these two men in white. Say, what happened to her? Well, they just had her almost up to the moment there of the great big buy. She was promised a year's supply of pantyhose, two trips back and forth to Hong Kong for her and her husband, a washer and a dryer set inside another washer and dryer set. She was promised a 6-year supply of wax for her automobile, a 10-year supply of honey, a 25-year supply of whalebone for a corset. She was promised about 15 sacks of pinto beans, and let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, a portable sewing machine and an automobile. And she lost the whole mess. You know what they gave her? No, what? Well, they gave her a Frisbee. And here she is. And so she's on her way to the hospital. Bring on the straitjacket. I don't know what in the world must happen to some of those poor folks who get disappointed at the last moment on those quiz shows, but I'll guarantee you it sure is a trauma to the audience, especially to their relatives. And it's kind of like one of the old programs, I Have a Lady in a Balcony, Doctor. You know, they could be at that time interviewed. Oh, how do you feel now that your wife just lost all that furniture? And I can't really believe what kind of problems must prevail in certain homes where the hubby is sitting out in the audience hoping his wife comes up with the right answer, seeing all those goodies that he couldn't earn in the next 5 years of laboring on his monotonous job. But if you think for 1 minute the Bible is out of date when it talks about people who bow down before their idols, you better think again, because we are in the midst of some of the greatest idolatry in worshiping material goods that has ever occurred in all of history. And you're seeing it all around you. It's ingrained inside human nature. Well, now you see there, I get started in the book of Jeremiah, and there are so many principles about life itself as you wade through a few verses in the opening chapters that I'll probably take months to wade through this book. But so what? I'm talking about the way life is anyway, so I'll probably keep on. If you write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, you'll get the article on how Mr. Ford's transition into office was taken around the world, the Gibraltar controversy, many other articles in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, and also this booklet on Is This the End Time? And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost. But tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.